God Talk with Anthony Brabazon, talking about Jesus, died, buried, risen, and relevant.
I want to go deeper.
Well, a very good afternoon to you all. Anthony Brabazon here, your host on God Talk, here with it for the next half hour on 90.3 Near FM. And I don't know if you caught our programme last week or not. We did a tribute to Keith Green, who passed away 40 years ago in that tragic plane crash. And gosh, what music Keith left behind, and also what a legacy about faith in Jesus Christ. Really good stuff. Worth checking out on the website if you want to get back to Near FM. The nearfm.ie website, go into the general section, go into God Talk, and you'll find all our previous programmes there that you can enjoy. So, anyway, hope you're enjoying this Monday evening on your drive home, or maybe it's your little tea time when you have your tea and toast this hour. Me personally, I like peanut butter on my toast. It's funny, I only eat it at this time of day. Don't eat it at all otherwise. But we do have a good program for you today, because we're actually digging deep into the archives. And I'm going back even further than God Talk, because a number of years ago I was involved in a podcast, and it was called Pilgrim Talk. I'm pretty good on the internet. You could dig in and find it there. And I did it with a good friend of mine called David O'Rourke. But this particular episode, and it dates back to, oh gosh, what's the year? I think it's about 2012. And I met a chap called Jeff Lillis. Now, this was an interesting conversation, because I was a believer and I believed in God, the Creator, as revealed in Genesis. And this other chap, Jeff, was an atheist. And he came across me through the internet. We met up, we had a cup of coffee and tea and a chat, and we recorded it. And it was a discussion. So I think you might find it interesting, because on God Talk, we're always trying to bridge the gap whereby we're not just talking to churchy people and just Christian people, but we're just trying to really whet the appetite for people to go and seek out the truth of God's word for themselves. Because whereas we might be convinced about the resurrection and the validity of Jesus Christ, you know, not everybody is. And I think it's great that we can talk, and it's great that we can debate. And I really honour our host station Near FM, who are truly open-minded enough to allow a lunatic like me on the airways. There you go. Hi to you guys. And but apart from that, I think you're going to enjoy this one. And the title, of course, is Does Science Disprove Faith? And but just before we get there, we're going to play a song from the Worship Initiative, and it's called Evidence.
I see the evidence of your goodness all over my life, all over my life. I see your promises and fulfillment all over my life, all over my life, yeah. Oh, you see. And all throughout my history, your faithfulness has walked beside me. The winter storms made way for spring. In every season, from where I'm standing, I see the evidence of your goodness all over my life, all over my.
Remember
I'm Anthony Brabazon.
And I'm David O'Rourke.
And we'd like to welcome you to Pilgrim Talk.
Two guys having a conversation about what it means to be a Christian in 21st century Ireland.
And today we'll be talking about, does science disprove faith? So Dave, does science disprove faith?
Well, I believe that the question itself is flawed.
Yeah.
Because
don't go all existentialist on me now.
No. Just that, you know, science, the perception is that there's one thing on one side, which is science, and there's one thing on the other side, which is faith.
Yeah.
But actually, science is full of faith, and faith is full of science.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back, further step backwards, Dave, to define terms here. Because often when people talk, they can have different understandings of the same words. If I go out in the street and I talk about God, well, I have an understanding about a creator God who sent his son Jesus, right? Another person might think, oh God, yes, that's the Hindu God. It's in everything and I'm God and we're God, and a pantheistic view. So I'm saying the importance of modern society. Often you have to define terms before you can have a meaningful discussion about it. Science, in my opinion, in most of what you read in the papers, in the popular press, in National Geographic and all these things, is evolutionary science. And even in the Word of God, in Peter's letter, he warned against a knowledge that people, falsely called science? There can be a falseness attached. Now, I know straight away people who don't have a biblical view will get up in arms with this, but the point is that true science is above all this, you know, and we're talking about true science here.
Yeah.
We're not
yeah.
talking about philosophy in any shape or form.
Yeah, because the fact is, the term that we so are familiar with, evolutionary science, is an oxymoron.
Yeah.
In that, the self-definition of science is that it is a process by which facts can be demonstrated that a prediction can be made, mm-hmm. and then that prediction can be demonstrated in fact.
Theory can be falsified or proven, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have scientific theories, but that's not actually science until it is actually demonstrated. Now, how many people have demonstrated a Big Bang? You see, you can't demonstrate a Big Bang.
We all blew up the lab in school, didn't we?
That just doesn't qualify as a Big Bang.
It's a small bang.
You see?
Yeah.
You cannot demonstrate that.
Yeah, sure.
So at the core of what we call science is actually faith. You either because you believe something because you believe it.
Right.
And so at the core of evolutionary science is non-science.
It's faith.
It's faith.
Mm-hmm.
You have a belief in a singularity that for some reason we don't really know about exploded.
Mm-hmm.
You believe that. You look at the evidence that's in this universe and you use that evidence to support the belief that you have.
Yeah.
But you have never been able to produce a Big Bang or a singularity.
Coming to the chase here, Dave, in the book of Genesis, in the early chapters, it talks very specifically about the days and what God created, etc., etc. In school textbooks for biology or college books or popular books, it talks about a totally different thing. It talks about evolution and slime and becoming legs and becoming frogs, becoming whatever, apes becoming men and gradual changes over time. Now, they're both looking at the same thing. I'm an architect. I design buildings. I design two buildings, but they might look similar because I'm the same designer. But it didn't mean one evolved into the other. No, they're both just products of the same creator.
Mm.
Here's my point. Similarly, you'll see in the animal world, there's similarities. Now, you can conclude that there's one creator made the two different creatures, or you can conclude that one evolved from the other. Do you see, these are faith things, as you suggest.
Mm.
I believe for Christians, for believers in Jesus Christ, it's very important to believe in the veracity and the soundness of the book of Genesis. And it is greatly discredited as a book because in Christian circles, amongst even Christians who have a relationship with God, they absorb macroevolution in a huge way. They believe that days aren't days, that they're geological ages. They believe that there was death of lower species, you might say, before Adam arrived, meaning that death was in the world before Adam was here, meaning that God, death is not the result of sin, meaning there's a big question mark goes over the cross of Jesus Christ and what did it accomplish? And see, that's really what I'm coming to.
Right.
But
right.
It's probably a big topic. We might come back to this again sometime, I think.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
What we want to do this episode is we want to, we have an interview with, I'm a young Earth creationist and I happen to meet an old Earth evolutionist, Jeff Lillis. And so we'll just have this interview with Jeff, which we took recently. So I hope you enjoy this because it'll probably give you an idea on different worldviews. You believed right from the beginning there was a Big Bang or a beginning moment of universe. Is that correct?
I think one of the great scientific discoveries made by a Christian was the Big Bang.
Yeah, and just explain, just imagine our listeners come from Mars and they've never heard any discussion about origins. Just in simple terms, can you explain what the Big Bang was?
Well, it sounds like a rather large explosion. What we can do is we can look at background static radiation across the universe, and we can look at how light shifts as it travels from other stars. And because red light travels more slowly than green light, we can judge the speed at which everything is accelerating away from each other. And everything is accelerating away from everything else in a considerable amount of time. Our galaxy will
collide. So is there a single point then where things radiate from?
We can trace it back quite far to what's called Planck time. It is the tiniest possible measurable fraction of a second. Beyond that, everything is theoretically goes back to a singularity where time and space don't exist.
But does that mean, like, if we'd, God forbid, we had an explosion out in the street here, you know, and there'd be a point where the bomb was, and everything goes bang from the bomb, and it goes out in a straight line,
pretty much from that point. So do you think of the universe the same way?
You can think of it that way, yes.
Okay, and then just the, you know, we see spinning galaxies and things like that out there, you know, Milky Way. Oh, I'm not an expert here.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, but I've seen the pictures of spirally things out there. Mm. And so does the Big Bang explain that very well, or does that seem like a contradiction that you'd have orbiting galaxies when the origin was a single point?
Well, there's a lot going on there, and we could go in depth into gravity and so on, but I'm just conscious of what we can really achieve in 15 minutes.
No,
it's a fair question, and certainly one we could maybe come back to.
Okay, can I fast forward a little bit?
Sure.
Because after Big Bang, if we have planet Earth eventually, and we have the first form of life on Earth, and how would you describe that life?
Oh, I don't know. And you probably know quite well that the science of abiogenesis did not have any firm decision as to how life originated.
Biogenesis means
abiogenesis means from non-life to life.
All right, yeah.
What I can tell you is that it happened a very long time ago. That happened on a very small scale, which makes it very hard to track down.
Again, to try and simplify the leading up to mankind, you believe that there was different steps, obviously, along the way.
It's more of a continuum than steps. It's and you go for a little interpretation of Genesis 1, certainly, but I'd say Genesis 11, the origin of different nations and languages. Mm-hmm. Is that something you subscribe to, or do you go for a more mainstream view on the evolution of languages? No,
I'd believe that languages were created together at Babel, yes.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
But say, if we skip ahead a bit, would you say we went from Latin to Spanish?
There's been development since then, of course. Yeah.
Okay, sure. But
within species, new dog breeds, new cat breeds, and all the rest. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to use by way of analogy is the transition from Italian to Spanish. You wouldn't really describe in terms of steps. It's not like stage one, everyone changed grammar at the same time. It's a very slow and gradual
process yeah.
that builds upon itself.
Okay, just one of the fundamentals I know of aquatic creatures becoming land creatures is that do evolutionists see the origin of man, if they take a trace backwards, do they think that there was sea creatures that moved into being land creatures?
Actually, it's funny you should mention that. I completely forgot. I got you a small gift.
Oh, great.
Sure. And Desi might have mentioned that I bought him a book too. And it's called Your Inner Fish, which is...
My Inner Fish.
Yeah.
Right. I got fish inside.
It's quite topical. And I'll just tell you why I picked it for you. It's actually going back a little while. The first evangelist I met, he was a Catholic priest. He's... he worked mainly in China, bringing the gospel there.
Mm-hmm.
He also got in trouble there. He was once locked up by the police for some time and tried to convince his...
easy to do in China, yes.
Yeah. But I met him when I was about 8, and I said, well, why did you have to learn Chinese? Could you not just have learned 2 or 3 phrases saying, Jesus died for your sins, and just walk along and tell that to every person, that would be the job done? And he said, no, it's not quite like that. You have to understand the culture, you have to understand the languages, you have to learn how best to communicate with certain people. And then later, when I read the Gospels, I saw how the apostles, when Jesus came back, they didn't immediately go off and start preaching. They waited some time, and then the Holy Spirit came upon them, and then they were able to communicate with others, people saying, they're speaking our language. And that, in a sense, is why I bought this book for you. I think it'll be useful.
My Inner Fish. That's cool. I'll talk to you later about that.
Yeah,
that'll be great.
Sure, yeah.
But coming back to my question, I suppose, about the sea creatures becoming land creatures, is that, I'm just curious, is that a mainstream belief amongst evolutionists?
Life originated in the seas.
And the formation from breathing through gills to breathing through lungs, is there a view on how that happened?
Yes, it's actually.
It's in the fish book. Hey?
Yeah, that book is rather good. It would be a tricky one to skip over in a book of that title.
We'll have to start the fish podcast. Eh?
Yeah.
We'll do that later.
Yeah. The pondcast. We'll call
the pondcast.
It.
Yeah.
I think quite often the creationist view of sea life to land life is of a trout flopping up onto the ground and then flip flopping about. And then suddenly...
Looking for Mrs. Trout. Yeah.
Yeah, the limbs sprout out and it runs around the place. That's not actually how it happens. And if you look around the world, there are quite a few fish that have evolved the ability to breathe water. Lungfish in Australia are very popular.
That's right. There are semi-amphibious fish, or whatever you want to call them, yeah.
Yeah, so it isn't a case of going onto land and then you rather urgently work on how to breathe there. Yeah. What will happen is fish trapped in stagnant ponds, bodies of water, over, as evaporation increases in warmer months, will find they have evolutionary advantages in being able to leap out, gulp air, and then process it in sacks.
Are you saying it's a gradual process, the fish coming out of, or the creature coming out of the water to become a full-blown mammal?
Yeah, and I'll take you through the steps. First of all, you've got to get lungs, and as I mentioned, with stagnant water, you do have an evolutionary advantage to be able to process air, and any fish can do it in a sense. You just take in air and it mingles with water in your body. You develop larger and larger sacs, and it's just basically a pouch that can hold water and mix it with air you've gulped in. From there you can build onto our lungs, which are basically water, and have a network that allows the interchange from it. Now that's not really enough, because even if a fish can breathe on land, it's still a fish. It's just, it has no real great methods of locomotion. So there's an illustration on the front of your book, which is of no use to any of your podcast listeners for obvious reasons.
Okay.
Which shows the beginning of these, the beginning of arms. And you might ask, well, what's the point in growing arms if you're in the water? Well, again, going back to my analogy, stagnant water. You can be in a free-flowing body of water, but in summer with higher evaporation, that can go down. You can be trapped in more marshy, reedy areas, and you will have fins that will allow you to brush these things aside. And then there will be an evolutionary advantage. Fishes with larger fins will be able to move around more easily. They'll be able to maybe travel from one body of stagnant water to another. They'll be more likely to have offspring. Their offspring will again have longer arms, and so on and so forth. And we can trace in the fossil record the gradual move from just simple stumps like this to the form we find common in quite a few animals, most land animals, where you have one long bone, two bones connected, lots of little blobby bones, and then fingers.
Right. Okay, right. Well, that's a great detailed answer you've given there in a very short space of time. Can I ask you another question? It's probably slightly different, but the Darwin himself had a real problem. Well, first of all, Darwin's book was two parts. The first part, I read Darwin's book.
I haven't read it myself, but it's a good read. I must get around to it.
The first book is pretty scientific, pretty good. He traces what people commonly call microevolution. That's evolution within species.
Well, what creation.
And the second part of the book is about a theory where he says perhaps if we see it in the here, maybe it happened on the big scale, and that's a very brief summary of the origin of the species. Now, one of the things Darwin alluded to, of course, was the absence of transitional forms. And fast forward, I suppose, 150 years.
Could I ask for readers, could you let me know what you mean by a transitional form?
Well, if evolution happened, for example, if man came from monkey, then you'd expect monkey man. Gradual, whatever. But then 40, go back, what was...
748, I believe.
Okay, well, don't quite have time to go through the 48 of them at the moment.
That's a relief, but there are a lot of Latin names, and I'm sure it's...
But prior to that, obviously, the ape, where did the ape come from? And he came from... You might answer that one. What's the ape come from?
Another type of mammal.
Like you describe them slightly.
You can go back to monkeys, which are about, I was about to say,
small monkeys,
about the height of a bottle of wine.
And prior to that, are we talking about something looking a little bit like a reptile or something crawling along?
We're going to go from amphibian to mammal. Yes, I couldn't say specifically because, to be honest, I just don't know. I'm a man in the street.
Sure.
But are you talking about the transition, evidence of the transition from amphibian to mammal?
Well, I suppose what I'm coming to is this. If you look at the world today and the nature today, you'll see every creature being fully formed and perfectly adapted for its function and its environment, etc.
That's always been the case, yes.
Right.
Well, but perfect is a strong word.
But you would also find that they are within different kinds or families or whatever way you want to describe them, that they're like dogs are dogs, cats are cats, and humans are humans, and apes are apes. And whereas what's missing seems to be the links between the two, the dog, cat, the ape man, they're not walking down the street today.
Obviously you'd never have a dog cat because one is not the antecedent of the other. Cats didn't evolve from dogs. I see what you mean. Why don't we see, say, half an eye or three quarters of a leg? That's a good question. And one example I'd like to give, and I'm pretty sure it's in that book, is the move from a reptilian jaw to a mammalian jaw. We have one long bone along here, you can feel it. whereas reptiles have three.
Yeah.
You might say, oh, where do the other two bones go? Where's the transitional form that just has two bones, or how does it work? We do have quite a few fossils along that line, and what we see is we see those two extra bones growing smaller and smaller. And they go to a very unusual location. They go inside your head. And you know where you have a hammer and a stirrup inside
yeah.
your ear?
Yeah.
That's actually where they've ended up. You might say that sounds crazy.
Okay, that's fact, certainly a view, yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, but, Jeff, look, are you open to persuasion? Or do you believe that creation is wrong and Genesis, the early chapters of Genesis, cannot be taken as true in the scientific term?
True and literal. Could you say literal?
Literal, yes, but I'd be careful how I use words, because I know the Hebrew understanding of words is different to our Greek or Western understanding.
Or could you refer to your interpretation?
Well, okay, I suppose what I'll say is there's, in the account in Genesis, it talks about days, and it says there was evening and morning, and there was days, and then it says the order as well, because this, I suppose, is the area where theistic evolutionists would diverge from my view, is that God created, according to Genesis, he created, there was light, and then afterwards, a few days later, there was the sun, and, you know, he created the earth. He created the birds before the land mammals, you know, and the order is different in Genesis. Mm. So how do you view the book of Genesis? Do you believe it's true or not true? That's a tough one.
I believe your interpretation of Genesis does not mesh well with what we know about reality, which is a straight answer. In a more general term, I mean, I'm not sure if you've ever read Augustine of Hippo. I've got a Kindle recently. It's great. You can get all these old out-of-copyright works.
All right, yeah.
But even in the 4th century, he was definitely creationist, but he definitely didn't ascribe to a literal interpretation of Genesis.
Listen, Jeff, I'm going to say thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
It was very good and interesting talking to you.
Yeah,
and there'll be more of this, I'm sure, no doubt. And thanks to the listeners for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So this is Anthony Brabazon
and David O'Rourke
saying
goodbye
for now and God bless.
Well, I hope you enjoy that blast from the past. And don't forget to text in your comments. And God bless you all. And tune in next week to God Talk. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to God Talk with Anthony Brabazon. Our 24/7 comment, prayer and text line is 087-979-5454. Until next week, may you seek him, may you find him, and may you love him. And